Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. In this episode number 568, I'm welcoming to the show Dr. Matthew Housen.
So for children, a lot of times homework is a very low dopamine activity, which means they have low brain arousal. They're not activated, they're not engaged, and they're wanting to do avoidance. And so that kind of defines, you know, the topic we're talking about today is the homework battle. And so I think understanding executive function, just a couple other executive functions, emotional control is a common executive function that I deal with. So initiation, planning, organizing, self-monitoring, shifting, and emotional control are kind of the core executive function skills that we deal with. And the nice thing about them is their skills. So unlike height, you know, which is a more fixed thing, these executive function skills can be built.
Dr. Housen is a psychologist here in Dallas. He is the CEO and founder of the Housen Center, which provides psychological and educational services from assessment to treatment, even some educational support, helping your family if you are in this place of trying to decide which schools your kids could go to. He helps families do that based on a child's learning profile. And he and I started off both of our careers at the same place, the UT Dallas Callier Center for Communication Disorders. He has extensive experience diagnosing autism, attention disorders, learning disabilities, emotional behavior disorders, but also more than that, just supporting families so that their kids can thrive in the best environments that they can't. He is the father of four children, two in college and two in high school. And he is joining us today because I feel like one pain point a lot of parents deal with but feel ill-equipped on how to manage is homework battles. If you have kids with late elementary to high school homework, maybe this is a place that's causing a disruption in your relationship or some shame. And I wanted Dr. Housen to weigh in, especially regarding executive functioning. When do we actually need to seek professional help and support? And which specialist do you see when you need support? All of that and more in today's episode. Let's get right to it. Here we go. Hi, Dr. Housen. Welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. Okay, do I call you Matthew, though? This is tricky.
Matthew's perfect. No, Matthew's okay. So nice and easy and informal, which is how I try to be as a person. So let's just go with it and see how we do.
That's good. That's good. I'm so thankful that we reconnected eons ago, y'all. I had another career, and it's hard to believe, but I was a speech pathologist, and I was a newbie at the University of Texas Dallas Callier Center, which had a partnership with lots of different doctors. And one of my jobs was to assess young kids, and I oftentimes would refer them to Dr. Housen or Matthew and for further testing. And so that's how our relationship started. But that was like a couple decades ago.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I graduated from UT Southwestern in 96 and then was working at Callier my last year doing my postdoc in 1995 and made so many friends there. And I think that's kind of where we started our relationship. But that's almost 30 years or that is 30 years ago, Heather. So that's all we need to say about that today.
That's all we need to say. I went to an A&M like new parent meeting and they're like, welcome class of 2030. And I was like, what is happening? Impossible. How are we in the 30s already? Anyway, I swear the 90s were just like 10 years ago. But here we are. And so in all of that time, I've had four different boys and a new complete different career. And you have continued to help families navigate the world of education and helping them. And I think sometimes we seek out help when we hit a pain point or a wall. And for moms, that can literally be the 4:30 battle of trying to get kids to do homework, or it's the teacher conference and you're getting feedback that your kid's continually having misconduct in class or struggling. You get that first interim grade report. And so I know we're at the end of a school year and a lot of those parents have reached out to you in the fall, but I do think as the school year's ending, if you haven't already sought out help, or you're maybe like, I am so tired of battling my kid with homework, I thought it'd be great to have you come on and we could just talk through it. So how many moms come into your office and genuinely believe that the homework battle is a discipline problem, that their child may be defiant or lazy when it's something else.
You know, I think that a lot of parents, you know, dread that period of the day. And I think that a lot of them come in and they think a lot of different things. They think, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with my child? And it's a pretty common feeling that there's something wrong. And I would reframe it to we need to understand it better. I think when it comes to homework, you know, it's April, and I think about homework kind of like I do taxes. No one wants to do it. It's just fortunately adults only have to do it either one time a year or four times a year. Kids have to do homework 9 months a year. And so I think that what's really important with homework is trying to go a little bit deeper and figuring out what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for that mom who's like, I just think they're lazy. Mm-hmm. They just don't want to do it. How do you kindly guide them through that thinking?
Yeah, I think anytime I hear lazy is a behavioral descriptor, but usually, you know, I'm a psychologist, so I try to figure out what's the feeling underneath the behavior. And so a lazy feeling can be a feeling of fear, can be a feeling of shame, it can be a feeling of disinterest. And so I think it's important as parents, we kind of get curious about what is that lazy behavior about? Is it about the school that I'm in? There's a disconnect between my learning profile and my skill set. Is it I'm not getting enough sleep? Is it everybody else is doing the fun stuff and I'm looking out the window and they're on their bicycles and hopefully not their iPads, but doing fun stuff and I'm missing out? And so I think there's a lot of things that when parents come in, like I said, we try to get curious about what's going on and then unravel the mystery of the homework battle. And I think when we do that, parents start to feel a little bit more engaged with the process. And I often say, let's get off our heels and get onto our toes so we can get in front of it. Then I think we can be a little bit more proactive. And that word comes up a lot for me is, how do we re-engineer a problem so that we're not behind it?
That's good. And I have, like I said, four boys. And so four different versions of what this look like. And you're exactly right. The overwhelm or the fear, the shame. I do think for one of mine, really hard worker, still struggling, and finally was diagnosed with ADHD. Another, it was executive function. We hear these phrases.
Yes.
For a mom who's never heard executive function, like, can you explain what that is and why it matters when it comes to homework?
Yeah, executive function now comes up almost daily in my practice. And, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, we didn't really talk about it. So I think executive function comes out of our better understanding of neuroscience. And we look at neuroscience, we try to understand brain behaviors that lead to success. So executive function shares with CEO, that managing, kind of driving, planning function. So executive function are skills like, how do we initiate activities? So initiation is an executive function. How do we plan for the upcoming week, month, semester, year? How do we organize our things? How do we shift from what we love to do, which is a high dopamine activity, to what we have to do, which is a low dopamine activity? So shifting is a common problem because children come home from school, just like us coming home from work, we can't wait to come home, change our clothes, and finally do something that we want to do because we've been doing other people, you know, their agendas. So for children, a lot of times homework is a very low dopamine activity, which means they have low brain arousal. They're not activated, they're not engaged, and they're wanting to do avoidance. And so that kind of defines, you know, the topic we're talking about today is the homework battle. And so I think understanding executive function, just a couple of other executive functions, emotional control is a common executive function that I deal with. So initiation, planning, organizing, self-monitoring, shifting, and emotional control are kind of the core executive function skills that we deal with. And the nice thing about them is they're skills. So unlike height, you know, which is a more fixed thing, these executive function skills can be built.
Well, and they're also, are they developmentally, like they just show up as kids get older? So let's say we're talking about middle schoolers. I have a current eighth grader, And his school requires a lot, I think, of management and executive functioning throughout the day that I do think his brain is tired by the time he gets to the end of the day. Whereas my other kids' high schools, there is some executive function required, but because of the technology involved, it's less organizational load. And so I feel like it's more gracious to their developmental system as they're, you know, by the time you get to college, yes, you're having to use a lot more of those skills you talked about. But is this something, yes, you can gain and you can be taught, but it is also matched developmental norms?
Absolutely. We talk a lot about goodness of fit. I have my PhD, but if you put me in a physics lab, I'm horrible. And so developmentally, I'm not going to be good at those skill sets. And to your point, Heather, certain schools teach to the 50th percentile. 50th percentile is expected, but a lot of times just with us wanting to move our children along the academic continuum so that they are a year or two or and sometimes 3 years ahead in math, and some of them intellectually are able to do that. If we think about child development on a bell curve, I think in terms of bell curves, where breaking a bell curve down simply, I ask myself, is this person at the 50th percentile, which is on point, are they at the 84th percentile, which is a year ahead, or are they at the 98th percentile, which is two standard deviations above the mean? I'm going to lose your audience here a little bit with statistics, but I'm trying to do it fast. 16 percentiles a year behind. And so we see a lot of times in our practice, children whose IQ of 84th percentile would be a 115 IQ. An IQ of 130 is a 98th percentile. But many of those 98th percentile academic kids and IQ kids have 10, 15, 16th, 24th percentile executive function skills. And then you've got the mismatch. And I say the bigger gap between those developmental executive function skills, which are just like height, you can't speed someone's development up. You just have to be patient with it. We say that the brain, from an executive function perspective, usually is fully done at age 25.
Wow.
The thing that I say the most to boy parents is wait till spring semester of their junior year and most of the executive function skills will start to come along. Girls, spring semester, sophomore year. And that's just a general rule of thumb. Now, again, like a bell curve, some kids are going to be later than that and then many kids are going to be earlier. But yeah, we have to understand development and then we also have to understand where the deficits are. And then we have to be really careful about getting our emotional regulation issues, because adults still use executive function skills. And when we're fearful or nervous or getting ready to send, we've sent two kids to college. That's probably one of the scariest things I've ever done. Heather, you get it. So yeah. I think when we're getting ready to send our kids to college, we want to speed that development up. If they're not using a calendar, if we have to remind them when their haircuts are, that's a little bit off base where they need to be.
Yeah. Learning, like one of mine, he said, well, I can't keep all the service projects in my head. I said, well, maybe you could put it in the calendar and you don't have to keep it all in your head. Yes. Yeah, those skills. And some schools, again, I did a whole series on school choice. We don't always have a choice, whether it's financial or where we live. But if you do live in a community where there are choices, it might be something to consider. Like you said, if there's a huge gap between the intelligence and the executive function, maybe a diagnosis. You've said before, even with ADHD, like there can be a developmental delay in executive functioning specifically. But like there are kids who don't have a diagnosis and there's that gap. And it's very nice to hear as a mom of lots of boys that junior year spring. That is so true.
Is that funny? It seems to be when it comes together. So, you know, I think being aware of that and then, you know, really trying to use your resources around you to kind of get through these developmental hurdles that we face as parents. I mean, parenting is a developmental process just like growing up is. And I think, you know, there's a point you get to in parenting where you say probably the thing I say the most, which is it's going to work out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you're fighting a kid and you have screaming battles over homework, you don't ever feel that way. So, you know, we'll get into that a little deeper.
Yeah, it feels like with every battle, you know, you're getting the messages from the teachers. They're not turning stuff in. They're not completing things. That's one of my children. And then, so you're feeling that pressure from the outside. It's not even maybe something you care that much about, but mm-hmm. you're feeling like, well, I got to show up and be a good mom. And that means being a kind of hard on this kid, sit down, do the work. Have you done the work? Continually checking yeah. on them, but that's not helping them gain the skills.
Yes.
I know I don't have this on my list of questions, but do you ever do like training for schools to help them teach kids executive function skills as part of their school curriculum?
Yeah, absolutely. I think right now schools are, you know, certainly public schools, they are so taxed for teaching math and teaching reading and doing well in the STAR or the MAPS test, and then addressing the needs of students who have dyslexia or attention issues. So when you talk to school administrators, they all want executive function in their schools, but where and whom? And then, you know, that can very quickly become politicized. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, a lot of them, usually because of resources, right? They don't have the funding, they don't have the space for it in the day, they're just not able to do it. So some of the private schools, you know, have learning labs for students who have learning issues. And then in public schools, we have 504 plans and we have IEPs, individualized education plans. But still, most of them don't teach executive function skills. And so, you know, in our work, what we try to do is really first partner with parents, help them to understand what executive function skills are. And then it would be like an athletic coach partnering parent with an athlete to get better at whatever sport there is. I cannot teach my kids how to play golf. I can't teach them how to play tennis, but someone else can. Yeah. And I think there are some things I can teach my kids really well. And I would say they're kind of, their interest is open to what I have to say. But if I start to go down a path that I don't feel as confident in and I'm not as competent at, then they can read that pretty quickly. And that's my message that I need to get out of it. Because I think an important message to parents is, you know, homework is our child's job. We're there to support them. Mm. And as soon as we kind of take that on as an index of our effectiveness as a parent or our competence as a mom or a dad, then I think we're getting into some psychology that almost sets us up so that our children see that we're trying to own their problem. And, you know, one of the things I remember from grad school, one of my professors said is, if you're working harder than the person you're trying to help, something's wrong.
Yeah.
And so I think moms, if you're working harder than your student on homework, we need to kind of take it and put it back in front of them and then pull in resources. Meet with your child's teacher and saying, hey, we're having a lot of trouble with homework. What are some school-based supports that we can put here? Can she come to school early before and do it? Or can, you know, he stay after school? Or is there a retired teacher? Or is there a nice 16, 17, 18-year-old that wants to make 15, 20 bucks an hour to come in and be a homework helper? Because the majority of kids don't have ADHD. The majority of kids don't have a learning disability. But many children have trouble where they don't want to come home and do homework. And so if we can kind of find those workarounds, then the day flows a lot differently. And then, you know, homework that was 45, 75 minutes becomes 15, 20 minutes, depends on how the child that's developmentally where it should be. And then you can do the fun things that parenting, you know, can provide you.
And there's one thing to, you know, set up the environment, make sure they've got this, you know, like you said, a little downtime. Maybe mine likes to shower after track and then have mm-hmm. his downtime, have his snack, have the dog nearby. You can set up that environment. But you talk a lot too about us as parents helping with sleep, that it can be one of the things you do before anything else. So talk to us about the importance of sleep.
Yeah. I mean, in every feedback session I do with families, you know, I talk about a tiered model to intervention. And tier one is always one of five things. Sleep's number one. If you have a 5 or a 6 or a 7-year-old child, your child's sleep needs developmentally, and this is all bell curve, so the majority of kids need 11 to 12 hours of sleep. Wow. So if you have a 6-year-old and they have to be up at 7, they need to be in bed between 7 and 8 o'clock p.m.
Wow.
To get their 11 to 12 hours. And we know that anytime a child is underslept, that child is at risk for emotional reactivity, attention variability, kind of all of the bad things. The other thing that's foundational for tier one is exercise. Children getting movement is where they play is child's business, we say. And if a child's not playing, not moving their muscles, then they're not building necessary neurotransmitters. When we give children Ritalin or Adderall, those are dopamine agonists. They increase dopamine in the brain. When we give individuals Prozac or Zoloft or what are called SSRIs, those increase serotonin. Sleep and exercise are nature's way that we build those important brain chemicals that activate the brain to do the things that we don't want to. The other thing we talked about in addition to those two is obviously healthy eating. I talk about the importance of just sunlight and nature. I'm at my place in Ranger, Texas, and I come here every so often just to decompress and get in the woods and see the cows and see the goats and see the donkeys, and that helps me to reset. And then the last thing that's important for children is certainly something for the spirit, whether that's meditation or yoga or prayer. And I think if, as parents, we start there, then we're on our toes in parenting, we're proactive in parenting, and we're setting up a parenting plan that's forward-thinking and planful so that our children can face the challenges of homework or someone who's unkind to them with a full emotional reserve so that they don't get into some of the self-sabotaging strategies of, you know, negative self-talk, et cetera.
I felt like those things, sleep, eating, outside, exercise, were all like within my ability to manage and control. Up until about 13, 14.
Yeah, that's a great point.
This one of mine between 14 and 16, I mean, the amount of conversations we had related to these things, like you need sleep, you need to not just drink Dr. Pepper, you need to do some physical activity, you need to sign up for a team or try a sport. Like, we're saying all the things, but at some point you get to where there's an impact, like I can't make him and I can't monitor everything that goes in his mouth. And that feels really hard because you know it would be better for them and that they wouldn't feel as anxious or they wouldn't be as behind in school or, you know, as triggered. But
absolutely. So, I mean, you know, every teenage parent is like, I feel you. You know, it's really interesting. Teenagers are very much about independence and doing it on their own. And I give teenagers kind of a math equation, which is R plus R equals I. Respect plus responsibility equals independence. And I think that, you know, it's a model. And I think it's helpful for all parents to have models. And I think that with sleep, you know, we have 4 children also, 3 girls and 1 boy. And, you know, anytime you get past three kids in a family, you kind of realize how individual each one of them is. And you have 4 different versions, you know, of not the same thing. Yeah, exactly. So I think with teenagers, what's most important is really the relationship. And I think teenagers are much better when you're in the car and you're quiet and nothing's going on and they have something on their mind and they start talking to you. The mistake I make the most, I think, as a parent, because all of our kids, John's the youngest, is turning 16 on Tuesday, is I talk too much. And they're like, Dad, just stop talking and I'll tell you, right? Yeah. But before that, you know, I kind of get in the way and they don't want to talk. So I think as parents, you model it. It's what you do more than what you say with adolescents. And then, you know, each co-parent's going to be better at different things. And then at the end of the day with teenagers, some of it is they just have to figure it out themselves and they have to be tired and they have to be falling asleep in class and they have to hopefully say, I've got to get more sleep. I've been tired all day. When they're not doing that autocorrect function that they should do, that's when you have to look, is there something going on clinically? Is there a level of depression that's coming in? Is there a level of anxiety? Is there attention deficit symptoms causing them to where they are in fight or flight or freeze, the three Fs? And at that point, that's when they do need to see someone and kind of get interested in how they can kind of do things better.
I definitely, that was going to be one of my questions, is when do you know this isn't just typical adolescence or rebellion, or just trying to, like you said, trying to get independence. We love that feeding the mouth that bites you kind of concept of like, we want you to be an adult. We're helping you, but we have to, you have to show us that you're capable of managing this. But like at some point, and I, like I said, I've had different versions of kids. There are those that this is depression and we need to see a counselor. My question, I asked a friend this, and let's say that you're seeing the fight or flight and the anxiety. When do you see a psychiatrist, a psychologist? Like how would someone know who to see? Is it a, which of those three, a counselor, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, you go to first?
You know, nowadays, most psychiatrists practice mental health by, you know, we all start in the same place, those three or four. So mental health professionals are master's level social workers, licensed professional counselors, PhD or PsyD, doctor of psychology, psychologist or a psychiatrist. Everybody starts with the same thing, which is a clinical interview where they come in and we're trained to conceptualize problems differently. Psychiatrists are trained in the medical model where if we have depression, you know, we go through, psychiatrists go through sleep, psychiatrists go through exercise. And then many times if there's a need for a medication will be prescribed. Psychology, we're trained to, you know, I say, again, look at what's the feeling fueling the behavior, and then look at family dynamics and looking at, you know, family history. What are the genetics here? What are the symptoms? So everybody's trained to do the same thing. And it's interesting when we look at the studies of who's better, the studies say that they're all equally effective if the person that's seeing the professional has trust and feels heard and feels understood. So the good news is you can see any of them, but I think that where you want to go and when you need to go is, irritability is a part of adolescence, but irritability, much more than sadness, is the key feature of depression in adolescence. And so if you're seeing irritability, if you're seeing sleep disturbance, if you're seeing, you know, a decline in functioning, all children and who are adolescents love to be in their rooms. But if you're seeing much more social isolation, and I would say a deviation from what's typically gone on, then I think that's the time to go and see any of the professionals to start to look at it and take an approach. And none of them want to go because they're scared and they've gotten used to the way that things are. Not that that's healthy. So I really think goodness of fit is very important when it comes to adolescence. And so that's when you use your mom network. You know, we have families call the office, and Catherine is our office manager, and she spends a lot of time with the parents saying, tell me about your child, what are they like? And then she's able to match them with the clinician that we think will be a good fit. And that starts the process. And if you're in, if you're starting, you know, with tier one, right, you're doing sleep and you're doing exercise, we go to tier two,
which ability, as best,
as best of your ability. Exactly. And then if we do tier two, that's where we do accommodations and supports at school. Tier three for us is counseling. Sometimes that's parent counseling, adolescent counseling. Tier four is medicine. So we try to think in that model. So from least restrictive to more engaged. And teenagers are the most, their sense of fairness is higher than anyone. And I think when they feel like things are fair and understood, it's just when you try to get too controlling with teenagers is where you go off the rails, because it doesn't seem fair.
It doesn't seem fair. No, a question that I get sometimes from moms is, do they need a diagnosis? Like, let's say there's some neurodivergence, and I know there's a spectrum now that everyone's talking about. Big fan of Love on the Spectrum myself. But sometimes they'll say, do we even need a diagnosis? particularly if they're in the private schools where it's not related to a 504 or an IEP, doesn't make a difference if they are diagnosed with being on the spectrum or having ADHD. You know, there is a medication involved. What are your thoughts on getting an actual diagnosis?
You know, really, I prefer to reconceptualize diagnosis as profile. We talk about a profile. And so getting for me a profile is a process where I meet with the families and we do what's called a psychoeducational evaluation. And the psychoeducational evaluation gives me information about intellectual functioning. That's an IQ test. Gives me information about academic functioning. That's an achievement test. But the best information it gives me is information about social, emotional, behavioral function. So then I go back to my bell curve. And then when I get a profile, I can figure out where is intellectual functioning, where is academic functioning, where is executive function, where is social functioning. Social functioning is what we talk a lot about. And you'll see a lot in social media about how poor, especially boys' social functioning is because of their overindulgence of games, and they're not out or video games and media, and they're not engaging with others, and then emotional functioning, EQ. So we really pay attention to IQ. We pay attention to EQ, emotional functioning. We pay attention to SQ, and then executive function. And I think once we have a profile, if it does meet diagnostic criteria, if there's 6 out of 9 ADHD symptoms, or if reading has failed to respond to intervention, there's a dyslexia diagnosis, then we're able to get some more formal supports. But I think for families, you know, my desire when they leave our office at the Housing Center is for them to feel like we understand their child. And then we start to inform them on treatment options. Is family counseling the best treatment option? Is executive function training the best, you know, treatment option? Is medication even in the consideration? Every parent, I like it when they say, we really don't want our child to be on medicine. I say, great, neither do we. And then we go through the process of figuring out, do we have to graduate up to tier 4 so that that is a conversation that we even need to have?
So good. Super helpful. I'm thinking in my own, like, what my next phone call is. What's my next phone call? I did want to go back. I know that this whole conversation started with the homework battle, and I wanted to give moms, like, who maybe they're not thinking they need to go see a professional. They just really, tonight, today, to get them through the school year, they need some better tools on managing that. You kind of said hand it back to them, but what are some other tips you could maybe give them so they have something today?
Yeah, perfect. No, I think practical is, you know, we all want that. I really think that, again, in this proactive spirit, I really like families to think about the itinerary for the week or the plan for the week. So, you know, some people get on a plane and they go do a trip and they just wing it. Most people have an itinerary. It gives them a guide. And so it's easiest when families, moms and dads, partners get together and say, this is our vision. This is what's important. We're the CEOs of the family. And this is how we see things. We want to see things do. So we want to prioritize our faith. We want to prioritize sports. We want to prioritize how we treat other people. We want to prioritize educational achievement. And I think it's important for parents first to figure out what are the 3 or 4 things that are really, really, really important to your family. For us, it's, you know, for me, for us, it's how do we treat other people? Because I think if you treat other people, if that's your starting place, it's important. So let me get back on course, Heather. So to your question, I think the itinerary starts the week. And then we say, okay, beginning of the year, you're going to come home. We're going to do our snacks. You're the kind of kid that needs to come home, run around a little bit. So that'll be the schedule. After you run around, we'll do your snack, because running around is high dopamine activity. Getting a snack is high dopamine activity. Doing homework is low. And so some kids do need to run around. Ideally, you want to get homework done very quickly at the end of the day, especially for kids who have attention disorders and may be on medicine. And the way that those medicines work is you're getting to a peak about, you know, 11, 12 1, 2 o'clock, and then you're coming down the other side of the mountain on the medication effectiveness, and they're losing attention pretty quickly. So if you get past 6 o'clock for a student who's on a medication, it's really hard for them to engage those executive function skills of initiation and planning and organizing and self-monitoring. So I think timing homework, building a routine, and I know your moms are like, yeah, but we have soccer and we have dance and we have to do that. And that's why I think you have to be planful. There's some children that we don't recommend homework be done after school. We recommend if they're early risers, if they get up and they do it then when their brain is really important. So there's so many different strategies. Mm-hmm. I really like the adolescent, older student, older, you know, neighbor who can be paid a little bit of money to come a couple times a week and help with the homework battle so that it's off mom's plates. And then there are more, you know, professional services where you can find those resources. And then above that, kind of at the highest level of homework help or executive function therapist or executive function coaches that are really coming in and intensively working with your student to learn those skills. And that's an area that we really have seen both a need and a demand for families and really for individual students so that they can get those supports. And then they start to, you know, they like the strategies on how they can use technology to support their organization. And they like learning about, this is for more of the adolescents, a Google Calendar, how that can make their life so much easier and send them alerts. So if you can get your student connected to someone that they respect, that's a whole concept of a homework helper, is you want someone there that they're going to connect with, then you're in better position. And at least you feel like you're trying something. It may not work, then you go to the next intervention.
That's good. And I think, like you said, you're looking at your kid and what is their challenge. I mean, for some, it's they didn't even bring the right thing home. Mm-hmm. You have to start with some skills at school in the classroom where they're actually writing down and have some system of knowing which books to bring home. And at our kids' school, there's a different binder for each subject, which is really overwhelming for an eighth grade boy. But I think it's figuring out where's the breakdown happening. And then maybe it's they're sitting at the kitchen table for 3 hours. And this is, I'm constantly saying, okay, get back to the table, get back to the table. So you're like, which piece for my kid is, where's the struggle happening and how can we solve it? I think is good.
Yeah. We're spending over the summer building our homework hacker packets. So it's basically a tool chest of different things that every child needs in every home so that student doesn't sit down, go find a paperclip, go find the glue, go find the scissors, right? We want a homework hacker so that physical structure is with that student at the workstation. And again, that's proactive. So, I mean, everybody in the audience is always like, oh yeah, they get up and they go to the bathroom or whatever. We're not putting a toilet in it. But short of that, we're going to put the things that most of the time they get up to go distract themselves. You know, some other tools are let your students stand up to do homework. Some kids genuinely do better when they're listening to music. Parents, a lot of times, have a really hard time with that. What? They're listening to music? There's no way that they can learn. Some people do well with, you know, more less lyrical music and more just kind of melodic music where they can listen, because music is activating to our brains. You know, do short breaks, get up and do dance party with them in the middle of homework. Just do anything to kind of get up and engage their brain. You want to make homework as high of a dopamine activity as it can be, because taxes, it's almost April 15th, is a very low dopamine activity. It gets into a lot of our insecurities. It gets into a lot of our fears. And when the brain goes into that stress mode of, you know, fear and shame and avoidance and sadness and stress, it's not as creative. It's not as forward thinking, and it's not as effective.
That's good. Well, I know that some moms take the approach of, you know what, I can't do it. And they just leave the room and they're like, you figure it out. Others are hovering. And, but I do think one thing you kind of mentioned, And I want to give you a chance to speak to that mom, the mom who's just feeling a lot of shame about, I should have this figured out. Why does my kid struggle? Nobody else struggles, which we're big. We want to fight against that shame narrative and the isolation of it's only me having this challenge. So what would you say to her?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to say, first, you're not alone. You know, open the door, walk two doors down, and somebody's probably feeling that same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, there's stages of the school year. There's stages in child development. There's stages for us, you know, as adults. And I think that when you're in a rut like that, examine your sleep. Are you getting the exercise and stress management that you need? Are you, you know, giving yourself enough opportunities for self-fulfillment so that your dopamine activity isn't just making sure that your child's homework is completed? Because then you're in just this situation, either you've won, homework's done, or there's tears and fighting and you've lost. And then your self-worth really does take a hit because you're basing your parenting effectiveness on your child's business. And then don't go it alone. Teachers are super effective at helping parents solve homework battles. I think parents have a lot of shame and fear that if you open up and say, hey, we're having a heck of a time on homework, that they're going to be judged as ineffective as a parent. Teachers get it because they're with your student all day long, but they do have so many tricks and hacks that they can give you. And at the end of the day, many schools have resources, come to school early. Teachers get there and they're usually in the classroom without. Make an arrangement where for the next 2 weeks to your student, you're going to do homework at school. And then that way, when you come home, you're done. You can play outside. You can enjoy your snack. And then you're saying to yourself, and I'm done. I don't have to deal with any of this. So I would, you know, set it up where your student has the reward, the opportunity, or the luxury of doing homework at home if they're getting it done, but they do it at school if not. And then doing homework at home quickly becomes a higher dopamine activity if you reframe it in that way.
That's good. That's good. We are big fans. Yeah, don't mom alone. And that means include the professionals around you and the people. Your teacher is not your enemy. They're your partner in all of this, especially if there's multiple teachers involved in different subjects that are harder for one kid. One thing I want to mention before we go, we talked about sleep and I talked about teenagers and the challenge of motivating them. For a couple of mine, they got Whoops for Christmas. Have you heard of this?
No, tell me. I'm curious.
Okay, a Whoop band. It measures your sleep efficiency or effectiveness.
Oh, got it. Gotcha.
And it's kind of, and even just other activities like mine, we went played tennis at Christmas and it said, oh, you played tennis for 30 minutes. Like it can read based on your movements, what activity you've done. And my husband's a business guy and he's like, if it's not measured, it's not managed kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it has been amazing how one of mine, who's the senior, is changing choices based on the feedback his Whoop says. Like, he's like, well, I didn't get very good recovery last night, so I need to stay home from that thing. So, you know, whatever it is, he's recognizing how his body is responding and why. Anyway, I just think it's an interesting thing. If you have a kid that is a numbers person or does like gadgets, it's a great gadget. If they're not managing their own sleep well, they may be motivated by this.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Heather, several, you know, Fitbits were, I guess, the old Whoop.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I would have parents let their children sleep in a Fitbit and then they could look and see how much they moved and how much rest. So it sounds like Whoop is just so much more sophisticated. Yeah. And I think that that data, because data is cognitive, you know, where we get in trouble is when, you know, we're emotions are not rational. And when we're defensive, our adolescents are defensive of sleep doesn't matter. And I'm one of those people that can get by with 5 hours of sleep. You can't argue with that, but you know, that's a feeling. And so I think that taking data in this way is a really effective tool.
That's good. Well, thank you. I know we could talk for a lot longer. You are local here in Dallas, like we mentioned, at the Housen Center, named after you. Are there any other resources if a mom doesn't live in Dallas that y'all have on your website, or is it pretty much just a local resource?
You know, it's interesting. One of the and women that's worked with me for years, Amanda Salerno, moved to Houston, and we've set up a Houston satellite. Amanda comes to Dallas every so often and, you know, maintains her relationship with me. But we have an office actually in the Woodlands, so in North Houston. So we're available there. And, you know, we see a lot of families from Midland. We see a lot of families from Oklahoma City. With telehealth now, we're able to, you know, to do some of that outreach to families that, that aren't as local. So I just encourage families to call the office, let us know where they are and what their needs are. And then if there's a clinician in the community that we know, whether they're affiliated with us or not, we just want families to really connect to high quality mental health services so that, you know, the further these issues go, you know, go, the more intransigent they are. And so I think it's important that we are very proactive. We're very early identification. I don't think it's ever too early to test a student. I think it's often too early to get to a formal diagnosis. But like I said earlier, not interest in the diagnosis, interest in the profile.
And when you say not too early, moms are going to ask me what age.
Depends on the question. If your child's not talking, not interacting, 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. I mean, that's my speech pathologist. I did 0 to 3 child intervention. Yeah. So like, I'm like,
so critical.
They can start in the hospital if there's a need there.
Yeah. Never too early. I mean, for early reading, there's a family history, 5. If there's a family history of reading issues, we like to see 5-year-olds so that we can start early identification. You know, moms, the way that most clinicians think is in terms of what's called RTI, which is response to intervention. If there's a question, you get the profile, you put an intervention in, and that helps you determine whether you have a delay or a disorder.
That's good. Response to intervention. I mean, did it work? Did it not work? Here we
go. Exactly. That's right.
Well, I appreciate you. So thankful to reconnect and share you with my audience. I hope all of y'all have felt encouraged and supported. And thank you for all you do for families around Dallas and beyond. Thanks for being with me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Heather. It's great to be with you.
I did go over to Dr. Housen's website, thehousencenter.com. And there, if you just do /resources, there's a long list of books and links for parents, whether it's learning disorders, autism resources, so many different things that you can check out on their website if you're not in the Dallas area or in Texas. I'm going to pray over us. I know that we're nearing the end of the school year and we're all ready to kind of be done. So I'm going to pray that we finish well and get the support we need. Lord, I do thank you that we do not have to mom alone when it comes to our kids growing and their education and them being the best versions of themselves. I thank you for the professionals. I thank you for the teachers. I pray that we can partner with these people and not feel like it's all up to us to make sure our kids do the best that we feel pressure for them to perform to do, but that we can also support them so that we can have connected and loving relationships that reflect your love of us, that we can be the people of grace that we want to be, and that shame would not carry any place in our mothering, that we wouldn't feel like it's only our kids that are struggling and it's something wrong with us, but that we can figure out who you made our kids to be and the best places and people to support them. And Lord, I just, I do pray over a mom right now who's maybe just really at the end and overwhelmed as the school year's ending and feeling all these pressures around her kids' academics and just this challenge that she's under to help her child with, whether it's executive functioning or learning differences or ADHD or other mental health challenges, that you would hold her right now, that she would feel held by you, that she would feel your peace, and that you would point her to the next right step, the next thing that would not feel like a formula that she has to do, but just relieve that pressure that she's feeling, and that she would feel overwhelmed by your love. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, y'all, for joining me. We've had so many great episodes coming up. I'm really excited about who I get to bring on next week. So I'm not even going to tell you. So you'll just have to join me next week. If you're not subscribed, where the episodes just pop up into your podcast player, Why don't you try that today? That would be great. I'd love for you to subscribe to the show. I never ask that of people, but it is. I have started subscribing to some shows, and it does help make sure they're in my podcast player when I want to listen to them. All right. Here's to almost the end of the school year. I know I'm always excited for it to end, and then summer comes and then I'm overwhelmed in a different way. But for all of you that are having major milestones endings, just prayers over you and your hearts and your minds. And I'll meet you back here next week. Okay, bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.